Hello, friends. Welcome to Linoleum Knife, a podcast about movies on the internet.
Guess who picked the music this week?
I'm this week's music curatorial staff.
Yes.
Because it's my turn.
Okay, well, I didn't know if you had something to say for yourself
about
that.
I thought you were going to have something sassy you were going to say.
I think your choice speaks for itself.
My choice was, I rag on you all the time about songs from the 80s.
Yes.
So I played a song from the 80s.
See what I did there?
Hang on, I've got vamp a little bit here for us. I've got something going on.
Oh, brother.
I'm sorry. I just had toast and tea, and it was not going down right there for a second. You're gonna make food noises on the air now, are you? With your iced coffee can.
Coffee is not food.
Go ahead.
That is not a food noise. Food noise is chewing and smacking and slurping.
Which is not what I just did.
No.
I had pulled myself away from the microphone because I was having a bit of a problem.
I'm not being the judge of it.
Anyway,
you are.
Back to me and my music selection for opening the show. That was Suicidal Tendencies.
It sure was.
And the song is called I Shot the Devil. And it's about...
But I did not shoot the deputy.
No, it's about an attempted assassination on Ronald Reagan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because, you know, it was the 80s. Mm. And if you were in a punk band in the 80s... Your thing was shooting Reagan.
Right.
Pretty much. You either hated him and wanted him to die by natural causes, or you wanted to kill him. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you were punk rock.
Yes.
That's what the 80s were about, hating Reagan, if you were punk rock.
I was going to say, that the 80s, that's what the 80s was about for a very small subculture.
Yeah. And so, as this week features a film about Abraham Lincoln, who was assassinated, I thought, what an appropriate song. I didn't have any other songs on cassette about presidential assassination, although I bet you do, now that I think about it.
You have
the Assassins
score
on a cassette.
Yes.
It should have been your week then.
Well, if you had told me this is where you were going, I could have dug out any number of songs about presidential assassinations. We could have even opened with the duet between John Hinckley and Squeaky Fromm. There is one.
I know.
Stephen Sondheim's Assassins.
I know. And I've heard you listen to Assassins in the kitchen whilst doing the dishes.
Yes.
Many times. That did not occur to me. All I could think of was, it's my turn to pick the music. What do I know that's in the tape pile that's about a presidential assassination?
Yeah. It's the kind of thing...
Suicidal Tendencies, of course.
It's the kind of thing that keeps this show fresh and cutting edge.
The next, well, when the Lincoln movie comes out, the actual Lincoln movie.
Right, yeah. The Spielberg Lincoln?
Yeah, you can play...
I'll play like the Ballad of John Wilkes Booth or something,
right.
Yes. Okay,
yes.
Well, anyway. Put a pin in that and we'll get
It's funny that we have at least two cassettes in the cassette pile with songs about presidential assassination on them. Not just one, but two.
Ah, well, that's how we roll.
We come to each other from different worlds.
Thank you, Maureen McGovern.
And what else was I going to say just now?
I have no idea.
I don't know. I realized yesterday that I had never played the Suicidal Tendencies cassette.
Right.
Like I'd been saving it for something special.
Were they on Alternative Tentacles Records? Or?
They were on Frontier to get from the start.
I see.
But then they got big. They became very metallic. And they got on a major label. I think they wound up on like Epic. They got very popular very quickly. Suicidal Tendencies.
And did they sell out, man?
Of course they did.
Suicidal Tendencies didn't maintain their integrity?
That's what you did. I mean, unless you were really, 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 you know, down for the struggle.
Right.
Punk rock. You did. You cashed it in.
You wound up on a car commercial.
You wound up, yeah. Like you, someone said, look, here's a lot of money. And if you were...
Say, Iggy Pop, I've got Princess Cruises online, too.
Right. And well, you know, even I remember this was a big deal. I remember when Husker Du signed to Warner Brothers.
Oh right.
And that was a major thing. Yeah, like that was, and they made a very big, you know, deal, Husker Du did, about we signed this contract so that we can do exactly as we please.
Right.
Like, they aren't going to mess with us at all.
Right.
And they were, like, they didn't. Like, yeah. Warner Brothers was like, all right, do exactly as you want.
It was Candy Apple Gray was their first album.
And and they did. And I think that, you know, I think Husker Du helped, you know, destroy everything. I'm kidding. Anyway, I don't know where I'm going with this again. I'm lost.
Neither.
We're talking about Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
Yes.
Oh, wait. You know what? I remember what I was going to say.
What? Okay.
If you are listening and you are a regular listener, what are you seeing? Are you seeing a problem?
I'm not. It's fine.
You're
it's
not?
Fine. I'll explain it later, but no, all right. Everything's good.
All right. Because this is where I was going. This was where I was about to start. This was what I was about to start talking about.
Okay.
We seem to be having
audio issues.
People are writing us, and some are saying that they hear us fine, and some are saying that they don't hear us fine.
They have to crank it all the way up.
That they have to turn it all the way up, or that Alonzo is louder than I am consistently, or, you know, whatever. So here's what we want you to do. If you are a listener to this show and you are listening and you have listened consistently, or even if this is only your first time, email us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
God.
Why is
everything so difficult?
Email us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com and explain to us, A, how you listen to us. Like, do you download it? Do you go to iTunes? Do you go to one of the apps?
Do you stream it via Stitcher Radio?
Like, how are you listening to us? And what are your audio problems? And if you don't have any audio problems, tell us that.
Yeah.
If you listen, email us this week and tell us if you can hear us well or if you can't.
Because we're really trying to fix this, but we don't really know what we're doing.
We're trying to fix it, but I don't know anything about anything. And Alonzo knows like three more things than I do about
basically
audio. And so that's what we need. We need your input on how you're hearing us and at what quality you are hearing us. And that is it. That is the main question of the week. The rest of the questions involve Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter.
The thing that we forgot to do that we were going to talk about this week was put our Madea list together.
Yeah, we'll do it next week.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about Madea's.
Next week's when the movie opens, anyway.
We'll be talking about Madea. You know. Well, I know, but I think maybe they wanted to get caught up on Madea before seeing
it. Oh, really? You think somebody, even the question asker, even the person who asked that question, think that person really wants to bone up on Madea before
seeing Madea's
Tyler Perry's Madea's witness protection.
I'm sure you can walk into Tyler Perry's Madea's witness protection totally cold and still get the basic gist of Madea.
All you need to know is that Madea has evolved a little bit.
Yes.
Since the beginning, Madea no longer smokes weed. And
shoots people less.
Shoots people with less frequency.
But still hits children.
So yeah, still hilarious. Hits kids. So,
although, yeah. Chris Gore raised an interesting issue when he was on the podcast.
I know, and I don't think it's even an issue.
But do we know for a fact that Medea is a woman?
Yes, Medea is a woman.
Has she had children?
I can't remember if she's had children. But she's got all kinds of family, and no one ever talks about her behind her back as being not a real woman.
You know what? It could be that family thing that's so taboo that just is never discussed.
If
the kids don't even know because they just grew up knowing Auntie Medea.
No, if that were a taboo thing, someone would know. And given the human behavior that takes place in Tyler Perry films,
it's true.
Someone would blab. And then it would become a big
scandal
and a big source of family yelling. And that's how Madea movies go.
True.
There is no opportunity for family yelling that the Madea movies do not exploit.
Let it slide, yeah.
And so if it were the case that Madea were, in the words of Brenda from Scary Movie 4, "That ain't no woman," paraphrasing, in Scary Movie, not Scary Movie 4, in Scary Movie 1. In Scary Movie 1, when Brenda says, "That ain't no man," that's, you know,
yes.
Regarding...
At Shakespeare in Love.
Shakespeare in Love. It would have already happened.
Okay, fair enough.
If that were part of the Madea universe, it would have already happened. It would have happened in Madea Goes to Jail.
Oh, that's true. They Madea do throw her in with
goes to a woman's prison.
That's true.
Now, if they had deloused Madea with the other female prisoners,
right,
and discovered that Madea had Tyler Perry's Madea's penis,
That could still be a sequel, I think.
Yes. Actually, that's in production now.
He's doing the play first.
Tyler Perry. Well, yeah, it's got to make the circuit, and it's Tyler Perry's Madea's penis, and that's what's gonna. Yeah, it's coming.
And he's gonna cast Octavia Spencer.
Coming for 2014.
I did not see Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, so you get to run with this one.
Okay, so when Abraham Lincoln was a little kid, per History Facts. This is a documentary. When Abraham Lincoln was a little kid and doing his homework on the back of a coal shovel, his mom was a super abolitionist. And so she yells at this one guy and says, "Until slavery is over, we're all slaves." That's the way people talked back then. Mm-hmm. And then the slavery guy who owns the slaves, he lashes his whip at the camera and goes, "Wick-a-chick!" Right?
Because this is a 3D movie.
It's a 3D movie. And it comes right, it's a coming at you. Mm-hmm. Kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the whip comes out at your face and everyone in the audience goes, "Whoa!" And one comes back. Well, that's what Gary Cotty did anyway. Well, he was sitting next to me. By the way, before I finish describing this, Gary Cotty, our friend, and Gray Drake, my co-colleague, critic at movies.com,
are never allowed to sit together again.
By the way, that's who I am. I am the film critic of movies.com, and Alonzo is the film critic of therap.com and
yes.
What the Flick, an yes. internet television program about films.
On the YouTube.
Gary Cotty and Gray Drake are never sitting together again. The first 10 minutes of this movie, I was like, shh, stop it.
I'm going to separate you. Quit
two. It. I'm going to separate you two. Like, eventually they calm down, kind of. But this is the entirety of their relationship. That's how they communicate.
Well, I have to admit, Gray and I did that a lot during Margaret, but we were very quiet about it.
You did it during a screening?
Oh, yeah.
A press screening?
Yeah.
You guys are jerks.
Yeah, I'm very quiet about that sort of thing.
You're a guy jerk and she's a lady jerk.
No. Nobody heard us.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Were there people sitting around you?
Not like super next to or behind or in front of us. I know what I'm doing. I know how to behave.
Yeah. Well, you know who doesn't know how to behave?
Gary Cotty and
Gray Drake. When they get together.
Yes.
Because suddenly it's casual Gary. and those two, they get so excited to be in each other's presence that they cannot stop it. Like, they can't. It's like there's an invisible crack pipe
that please, they both. You're ruining Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter for the rest of us.
That's not the point. The point is that they're manic when they get together.
I see.
Yeah. I'm calling them both out right here.
Okay.
Not that either one of them's listening.
They're like the twins in Slapstick. You put them together and
right.
Suddenly it's this crazy.
Yeah. Thing. So, so here comes the whip. Ka-chow! You know, whatever the noise the whip makes. Make a whip noise. Yeah, good. Thank you. And the first thing you do is go, awesome, 3D, yay! And then the whip lands on the face of a slave child.
Oh! And what is this, Mandingo?
Yes! Essentially, Mandingo with vampires plus Abe Lincoln.
Oh, God.
And
what's that other, what's the movie that's even more horrible that I've never seen? Goodbye, Uncle Tom?
Drum?
Well, Drum was the sequel to Mandingo, right, which is supposed to be pretty awful also. But there's some, like, Italian, like, sleazy exploitation movie called Goodbye, Uncle Tom.
Oh, really?
That I've never seen. I've never seen. But apparently it's really,
really crazy.
Beyond the pale of that sort of thing.
Remember when we saw Mandingo at the Egyptian?
Oh, yes.
And all the cast and the director, and they were talking about what a serious, important film.
Yeah, like they
was.
Had made Roots. It was hysterical. it was part of a Richard Fleischer retrospective at the Egyptian, which, you know, Richard Fleischer, bless him, has made some real stink burgers, and Mandingo was one of them. So he's there. Perry King is there.
Yeah.
The lead African-American actress.
Lots of folks were
something
there.
Something Sykes. I forget
her name. I don't remember who was there.
Brenda Sykes. Okay. And they talked about it in such hushed, reverential tones.
Yeah, it was nuts.
Like they had blown the lid off of slavery in 1976 or whenever that movie came out. Oh, my God. It was the funniest thing. And, of course, we had all come there to mock that movie and to laugh at it. So it was sort of like, are you going to stay for the whole screening? Because we're kind of here to hoot at the screen. I did get to see Dr. Doolittle during that retrospective, though, with Samantha Eggar there, which was pretty awesome.
I know. I was there with you.
I know. I'm just saying, that was the upside of the Richard Fleischer.
That was not the upside of the Richard Fleischer retrospective. that was the moment you became a Kool-Aid drinker for Dr. Doolittle. A film that I loved as a five-year-old, and as an adult now, am a little freaked out by, particularly the moment where he makes out with a seal.
Oh, well, okay, yes, obviously that's a dumb moment. But you know what? I like...
There's a man kissing a seal on the lips after singing it a love song.
Yes, yes.
In a children's film.
I know.
All right.
Nonetheless,
I'm just telling you,
I like Leslie.
The thing that you are so into now.
I like Leslie Bricus music, and he did the score. Anthony Newley is singing it, and you know, and I love to annoy you with my impersonation of Anthony Newley doing the score.
You do that. Yes. Okay. So first of all, we've set up this film, Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, as an exercise in the worst possible taste.
Yes.
When it comes to the issue of slavery, you're simultaneously meant to be repulsed by the horror of slavery and go, "Hoo-hoo, 3D." So Abraham Lincoln grows up, and the slave child grows up to be Anthony Mackie.
Okay.
And they're best buddies. That's their best friends.
And does he have a scar the whole time?
Uh-huh. Of course. Yeah. And Abraham Lincoln sees his mother die also as a child of the vampire blood sickness, you see, because the vampire got her.
Uh-huh.
And little Abe saw the vampire. Mm-hmm. Like nobody else sees these vampires, but little Abe saw the vampire. And so he's got a vendetta. He wants to kill the vampire that killed his mama.
Mm-hmm.
And along comes Dominic Cooper, who says, all right, I'm going to teach you how to kill some vampires.
Mm-hmm.
And Dominic Cooper is a vampire himself, but he's off. He wants to kill the other vampires.
So he's like the White Blade?
Yes.
Okay.
And so he teaches Abe to kill the vampires in a great therapy session that involves swinging an axe at a tree. And he says, if you're really using all of your anger, you'll chop this tree down in one swing. And so Abe can't, you know, quite do it. So obviously he's not feeling enough. Mm-hmm. So Dominic Cooper really tries to help Abe get in touch with his feelings so that he can knock down a tree with one swipe. So it seriously is like ordinary people in this moment where Judd Hirsch is trying to get
the White Blade.
Timothy Hutton to learn to kill vampires and then become the president and stop slavery and write the Gettysburg Address. Then Harriet Tubman comes along.
Of course. Why not?
Because
does Jenny Lind, the Swedish Nightingale, feature into this somewhere?
No.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah, they didn't think of everything.
No, clearly.
The the Union is fighting the Confederacy, of course.
Right.
In the War of Northern Aggression.
Yes. The War of Vampire Aggression.
Well, the Confederacy is the vampires.
Yes, of
course. They have taken over the vampires. The vampires have taken over the Confederacy.
Uh-huh.
Clearly, that's why. It has nothing to do with slavery. It's just about vampires.
Because vampires love cotton.
Yeah.
I don't know where we're going there.
And they...
So vampires support states' rights.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And so, but you can only kill them with silver. And so...
What?
They, look, who are you to question history? You just let me tell you about history.
Werewolves.
I'm telling you about history.
So is the axe silver?
Yes.
Okay. This is still stupid, but go ahead.
Are you calling history stupid?
I'm calling Timur Bekmenov, whatever that guy's name is.
I'm calling him awesome.
And Seth Graham Smith.
Don't call him stupid. You call him awesome. Harriet Tubman comes along, and she helps smuggle silverware, forks, so that they can cover the bullets with the silver and use them to shoot the vampire Confederate soldiers.
So now, is everybody who's anti-slavery in this movie really just anti-vampire and they don't really care about slavery?
They're anti-slavery and anti-vampire at the same time.
I see.
Because the two are inextricably linked, slavery and vampirism. And then, okay, so they kill all the vampires, and they win the war, and Abraham Lincoln gets taller and grows a bigger beard. And, oh, and I'm sorry, in before that happens, there's a horse stampede where a vampire picks up a horse and throws it at Abe Lincoln, which is great. And then There's also this part on a munitions train on a big tall, like, it's like a mile in the air, this bridge. It's crazy. Over an abyss of doom and fire. And the bridge is on fire, and it's made of wood, of course. And so the bridge is collapsing, and the train is going to go down into a fiery pit. But Abe Lincoln and vampires are running across the top of the train fighting each other. But then, you know, they kill the vampires, and Abe Lincoln goes off to safety. And Mary Todd is mad at Abe because their kid gets killed by a vampire. And so she's mad, you know, like, you care more about vampires than you care about your family. And they came and got us because you were busy. And so she's mad. And then they win
the
war.
Wait. She's mad that he was busy fighting vampires so that he wasn't home to fight vampires?
Right. And then... they go, then they win the war, the Civil War, and Abraham Lincoln recites the Gettysburg Address, and then Mary Todd yells, "Abe, we're late for the theater." The end.
Wah, wah. Okay, well, that plot synopsis was longer than the Gettysburg Address, so is it any good?
I just told you.
Did you like this movie?
This was the stupidest, ugliest film I have seen all year.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I liked it.
Is the 3D any good, or is it all post? I heard it's all post conversion.
I don't know what it is.
Apart from the whip in the faces, or is it used well?
It's used to offensive effect. Go see it, everybody.
So it's terrible, but you enjoyed it.
I had a good time. It is truly an ugly, ugly looking movie. Like, the Timur Bekmambetov, the director of Wanted.
Yes. And Night Watch.
Did everything he could to make everything look as terrible as possible. And he succeeded, which means that this film works on the level that the creators wanted it to work.
Wow. Now this is a production of Seth Graham Smith and Tim Burton, who,
yes,
from the team that brought you Dark Shadows.
That's right.
That line hasn't been used in any of the advertising.
Yeah.
Better or worse than Dark Shadows?
I was bored by Dark Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
I was really bored by Dark Shadows. I mean, I like the production design. I like how it looked.
Sure.
I hated how this movie looked.
But you weren't
But
bored.
I was not bored.
Okay.
Befuddled. Perhaps. But not bored.
Okay.
This man is not a good director of films. But he's a crazy director of films. And I think he doesn't care about really anything except, is it awesome? Does it look cool? Is something insane taking place on the screen right now? And if you can say yes to that, then he'll say, can we also whip a slave child in the face? Yes, we can do that.
I mean, I have to
awesome, let's do that.
I really enjoyed Wanted.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, of course.
Totally yes. Dopey and whatever. But.
So Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter mostly is... It gave rise to, I'm going to return to the subject of Gray Drake and Gary Cotti, gave rise to a little game that was played after the fact where we all stood around and we made up new titles for sequels like Benjamin Franklin, Amusement Park Exorcist, and James A. Garfield, Lobster Doctor. Gerald Ford, Lady Tickler, things like that.
I guess you had to be there.
We had fun.
Good.
We had a good time.
Glad that worked out for you. Okay.
What's the next film we're going to talk about?
Let's talk about Brave, because I feel like I like this movie a lot, and I'm sort of stunned to discover that...
other people are not liking it.
Other people are not liking it.
I thought it was great.
It's you know, I think it's got like a 70-something on Rotten Tomatoes, but, you know, Pixar is usually in the high 90s.
I think it's... Well, you tell me what you're going to...
Well...
You talk.
You know, I mean, the basic rundown is that it's...
I've just explained history to you.
Yes, so thank you.
Let's go to the realm of fantasy.
Yes, let's do
and
that.
You can explain
let's
that.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's Pixar's first film with a heroine, with a leading lady, the Princess Merida in Scotland, and you know, in ye olden times, and she is really ferocious with a bow and arrow, and does not, you know, sort of hew to the traditional path of the princess, which her mother, the Queen Eleanor, who's voiced by Emma Thompson, is trying to guide her on. She's not particularly interested in getting married. She's not interested in, you know, courtly things. She wants to ride her horse and shoot her arrows. And so the time comes that the other clans send their firstborn sons to compete to be her suitors. And she winds up besting them all at archery and claims that as the firstborn of her own clan that you know, she has the right to fight for her own hand. Which displeases the queen greatly and sends Merida running off into the forest where she follows the will-o'-the-wisps to a mysterious cabin. And then what happens is apparently to some people a spoiler, which I didn't think it was. And I talked about it in the rap review. And if you want to know what it is, go read my review, but we won't talk
about
it.
I leave it out of my review.
Good for you. Because I got to take the heat on that one because I posted mine first.
That's right.
Coward.
Otherwise, I would have just gone and said
it. Yes, because who knew it was a spoiler?
Because I mean, here's the thing.
If your rule biggest... is it's not in the trailer, then it's a spoiler. Well, then I guess, but you know.
I don't watch trailers, and it's not my job to watch trailers. I often, this is one thing that I know, often what will happen in press notes is... They will sometimes the studios will say, please don't discuss XXX whatever in your review. And then, you know, unless you're a jerk, you try to adhere to that. It doesn't happen very often, but sometimes that happens.
And usually, you can tell if something is a big enough, you know, what? The kind of plot thing that it merits being a spoiler. Or as Matt Atchity put it regarding this one specifically, it happens in Act 2.
Right.
So I don't think that it really counts as a spoiler, but people think it
does.
Some
people think it
does. We won't talk about it just because of you jerks. sorry, James. Anyway. I liked this movie a lot.
Yeah.
I think it's
me too. I thought it was terrific.
It's visually gorgeous. I liked the characters.
I agree.
I like the fact that it's about a mother-daughter relationship.
Agree.
That it's about a strong, independent young woman who is not defined by man in her life or her search for a man in her life.
Agree.
It's funny. It does all the things that you want Pixar movies to do. And, I mean, okay, yes, it's no Toy Story 3. But, hey, it's no Cars 2 either.
It's narratively messy. And,
do you think?
And weird. Yeah. And I think the elements of weirdness in the film may turn people off. I mean, I think it doesn't always go in a straight line, you know, narratively. It doesn't go, this is happening, and now this is happening, and now this is happening. There's the forward momentum sometimes gets muted by stuff that is related to the spoiler. Yeah,
see, I don't agree. I think the spoiler stuff imposes a certain kind of ticking clock to the plot.
It does.
And it underscores the conflicts that have been happening up to that point.
It does. But it also, what's the word I'm looking for? It mutes the action. Because I can't even describe it now that it, because we've imposed our spoiler non-speak about
it. Let me try this. Do you think that it mutes the action because it forces the protagonist to adopt a defensive stance?
Also, yes, that is one thing that it does. Also, it requires the protagonist to not boldly march forth with her own mission, but to stop more than once to consider the possibilities of that, the possibility that she might not be 100% right. And so when you've got a hero in a film that has to stop and consider that they might not be fully right about everything, that they might have to compromise on something, or they might have to understand another person's perspective, that's
drama.
I understand. But what it also does is it slows down action momentum. And if you want a film to be a big adventure, you know, action adventure film, and the title is Brave, you know, then what you're expecting is a more traditionally masculine approach. Here's where I'm going to hang on just a second. A traditionally sort of masculine approach to the idea of epic heroism. And what I think is so great about this movie is that it is narratively messy. What I think is so great about this movie is that it does force the hero. It is a very female kind of film, and that it does force other perspectives onto the hero, who is the girl, Merida. It does value emotional complexity at the expense sometimes of that big sweeping epic action. And so I like it for that. And that is a thing that I think, you know, it's not a problem. When I say it's narratively messy, I don't mean that it's a problem. I just mean that it isn't what people are expecting. I think that might be a problem.
But I don't know that I agree with your central point though, because look at, say, Woody in the first Toy Story movie. Mm-hmm. You know, he resents Buzz Lightyear. He does everything he can to get rid of him, and then is put in a position where he has to save him, mm-hmm. or else be shunned himself. And I think that Merida has a similar arc where she wants things to be a certain way, and in doing so creates a much bigger problem, and then has to resolve both the problem she's created and the thing that started in the first place.
Okay.
So I think it's a more straightforward narrative than people might give it credit.
I don't know that you and I are actually disagreeing on anything right now.
No, I know that we both like it, but I'm just saying you're attributing this certain sort of narrative oddness to it that you think is going to be difficult for some audiences, and I think that it's a pretty straightforward story.
Okay.
Anyway, we like it.
I'm trying to explain why it might be in the 70s on Rotten Tomatoes.
I don't know. Who knows?
But I think it's terrific, and it's beautiful, and it moves. It moved me. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't cry like you do in films, but you know,
I didn't cry this one. I did get a little, you know, a little misty, but that was about it.
Yeah. But it's wonderful. It was wonderful. I mean, yeah, and especially after Cars 2, you know. I'll take anything.
I think after Cars 2, people decided that it was now safe to go gunning for Pixar.
Perhaps. That might be.
Yeah. I think that's part of it.
Yeah.
Because I remember, like, even... I think I was probably nicer to Up than I meant to be when I reviewed it, because people at the time, like, Pixar was so, like, unassailable, like, can do no wrong. And I think there's a lot to like about Up, but I think that it has flaws as well.
Yeah.
But anyway, also opening this week, Seeking a Friend for the End of the World.
Was that this week?
That was this week.
Eh.
Mm. Eh. You liked it more than I did.
Well, no, I liked it. When you say I liked it more than you did, uh-huh. I liked the first half.
Okay.
Without defense, I liked the first half because it got darkest in the first half. People are shooting up at dinner parties. People are committing suicide. People are committing suicide by hiring assassins to murder them. People are doing crazy things. Everyone's taking ecstasy. There's an orgy at the TGI Fridays. It's like, that's funny. All of that stuff is funny. When a punchline involves someone smashing into Steve Carell's windshield when he's about to start his car because this guy has just jumped from a building, that's hilarious. But then it stops being an end-of-the-world comedy and starts being an end-of-the-world
romance.
And that's boring.
Well,
and a bummer.
I don't even think the first half is that great.
You're not going to get me with Scott Walker songs either.
Yeah.
I know.
Especially if you're going to pull out Scott Walker's first solo album and play a Walker Brothers song.
That was a strange visual moment because I was like, oh, you've got a Scott Walker album, but you're playing The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore. And that's
from the earlier.
That's when the Walker Brothers were like the Righteous Brothers, yeah. You know. It didn't make sense. Like, they relied on you not knowing.
Yeah.
So that was the thing.
My thing about it is I found Steve Carell and Keira Knightley really unengaging and unappealing in this movie. He was too Eeyore and she was too Manic Pixie Dream Girl. And so I like when they would encounter other people, you know, when they would encounter Patton Oswalt or T.J. Miller or William Peterson or, you know, Melanie Lynskey or whatever. But, you know, them left to their own devices and talking about their stuff was just not engaging at all.
Yeah, they're not good for each other in the movie. They're not cast. They're the wrong people to be in this film.
Yeah.
And
the movie wants us to believe by the end that it's not just that they are falling into each other's arms because of
circumstance.
Because of the end of times. No, that they were always meant to be.
It was a destiny thing that they were soulmates from the beginning.
Which I don't buy for a second.
Yeah.
So the two movies to rent instead of this movie. One.
Melancholia.
Well, that would be three then.
Okay.
One would be Lars von Trier's Melancholia, which is also about the end of the world. One would be Don McKellar's Last Night from 1998, another film about the end of the world as seen through the point of view of just everyday folks and how they react to the imminent destruction of everything, which Seeking a Friend for the End of the World borrows a great deal from, but not very well. And then I would also recommend Stephen Kayak's documentary about Scott Walker.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, what's it called? Something Century Man?
21st Century Man or 22nd Century Man? Something like that.
Something like that.
23rd Century Man?
I forget. Something Century Man. Stephen Kayak, K-I-J...
33rd Century Man?
Stephen Kayak, K-I-J-A-K, a very talented filmmaker. He also did that thing about the Stones a couple years ago. But yeah, his Scott Walker doc is very entertaining. So avoid Seeking a Friend. Go see those instead.
Now, can we talk about what happens at the end?
Well, the fact that the world does end, I think that's not a spoiler. The title does promise it, and they do deliver on it, which is, I worried going in, like, well, are they going to not end the world in this?
All right. So, what you can be happy about, end of the world fans, is that they don't blanch.
Yeah, they don't hitchhiker's guide it.
Yeah, they don't pull back at the end and save these people just because they fell in you know, yummy love with each other. They die. And that's
along with everyone and everything else.
And that's great. Yeah. Like because about halfway through when it stopped being funny and started being about them being in love, mm-hmm. I thought, oh no, the asteroid's going to miss the Earth. That's the plot. There's an asteroid right. headed for the Earth, and there's nothing they can do to stop it. And they said, the asteroid is, I thought, they're going to make it miss. It's going to miss. Their science is going to be wrong. And not only do I hate it in movies when science is wrong, because it just feeds the manic craziness of people out in the world who don't believe science ever.
Things like evolution and climate change.
I hate movies where they promise something truly wrong.
Cataclysmic.
And then they don't give it to you.
Right.
Yeah. But they give it to you.
Yes. I'll give them that.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Everybody dies. So it's a happy ending. What is our next film to discuss?
To Rome with Love.
Sure. It's fine.
It's fine.
It is a fine bit of Woody Allen coasting.
Yeah, it's weird because my thing with Woody Allen is that I tend to really like his movies or find them unbearable. He's not a director who has provided a lot of middle ground over the years.
Nope.
But this one?
Did you see?
Middle ground.
What have you hated?
Curse of the Jade Scorpion.
Yes.
Scoop.
Yes.
You Will Meet a Tall Dark Stranger.
Yes.
I haven't seen a lot of the ones that I knew I would probably hate. Like, I didn't see Anything Else or Whatever Works or Hollywood Ending. But I kind of picked up the vibes on those.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've seen enough of the ones that are just like, ugh.
They're all terrible.
Celebrity?
I kind of was okay with Celebrity.
Mm. No, anyway.
I like the part where Charlize Theron says,
oh my God, I need some echinacea right now. I forgot about that for just a second.
Yeah, that's I like that part of Celebrity. This is the thing, you know, it's like the midnight in Paris, and then you know, go to the Rome, and the things happen in Rome, and people are in love, and they fall in love, but they're not supposed to because it's the wrong person to love, you know, and that's his constant
go-to.
I said in my review, I would really like it if Woody Allen, who is now an old guy. What's going on? What's happening? Who's honking out there?
Oh, the car horn is a thingy in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
In your neighborhood.
The, is that one of our cars? You don't think so?
I don't think so.
Okay. You sure? It's not coming from under the building.
I don't want to be that guy.
It's coming from out front.
Yeah, I think that's not the street.
Us. All right. But it's going to just keep happening. So, okay, don't draw attention to it.
Sorry.
I would like it if Woody Allen would be an old guy who's wise.
Who's learned anything. Who's
learned a thing about his main topic, you know? And I think the lesson of this film and all the others that have led up to it is that he has not, and he's never going to, because, what is he, 80 now? He's
like that.
Old. He's really old now. And his characters continue to do the same thing with their lives.
Probably 70s, actually.
That he has done with his. And that is, you know, fall in love with someone and then have no reason, nothing to say about it. Nothing to say other than, you know, who can understand the heart? It is mysterious.
The heart wants what it wants.
Yeah. And that's fine, mm-hmm. you know. But if that's all you got from me, then that's, you know, that's Ingmar Bergman and the Silence of God that he never figured out. You know, which I don't mind that about Ingmar Bergman, but it is a little frustrating, you know. And the thing about The Silence of God is that it's not knowable. I think your own mind is a little more knowable.
Yeah, especially for somebody who's probably been in therapy for the last 50 years or so.
And so, you know, it would be nice if there was some, you know, forward momentum, some progression with Woody Allen on that topic. But there's not. Now, even though there's not, you get fun stuff along the way. You get Alec Baldwin being magical, like as a magical presence in the film, kind of like Ernest Hemingway and the other people from the past.
Well, I think more like Humphrey Bogart in Play It Again.
Also that, but you know what I mean. Like, like people who aren't really there, or maybe they are.
Yeah, it's unclear.
Yeah.
I probably never liked Roberto Benigni more in anything.
Well, yeah, because he's dialed it all the way down.
Yeah, he is like super playing it straight almost. Where basically this movie has four plots that don't connect at all.
It's more than four, isn't it? It seems like more.
Roberto Benigni becomes famous for no apparent reason.
Right.
Alec Baldwin monitors the inappropriate love affair between Jesse Eisenberg and Ellen Page.
Yes.
Woody Allen comes to Rome to meet his prospective son-in-law and turns that guy's father into an opera star.
Right.
And the newlyweds accidentally get separated.
And tempted.
And tempted by a prostitute and a movie star.
Yeah. Well, I guess it was only four.
Yeah.
It seemed like more.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It seemed like a lot of people doing a lot of things.
Well, yeah, it's a big cast, but it's four stories.
And ultimately doing not much of anything.
Not really, no. And you don't even really get that much of a sense of Rome the way you do in, say, the sense you get of Barcelona in Vicky Cristina Barcelona or of Paris in Midnight in Paris.
Yeah.
Rome, you know, yeah, there's the Colosseum and there's some ruins and... this gelato is good, you know, but there's not...
There's a Trevi Fountain.
There's a Trevi Fountain, exactly, yeah. But I don't know, I felt like there wasn't as much travelogue for your buck.
This gelato sure is good. That's funny.
Yeah, no one says that. So. I know it sounds like a Woody Allen line, but...
You don't have to see this. I mean, even if you're a Woody, if you're a Woody Allen fan...
If you're a completist.
This will be one that you kind of like.
Yeah.
It is very lightweight. It is perhaps even lighter weight than Midnight in Paris, which was already the fluffiest thing that he has done. I don't know how long it has been since he's done something that much of a trifle.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing.
Manhattan Murder Mystery.
Yeah, and so this weighs even less than Midnight in Paris.
Mm.
But
you won't be miserable.
No, yeah.
It will just be this.
Your parents will really like it.
Yeah.
Your parents will like it. Your mom will think it's nice.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the other movie opening.
Unless your mom's favorite movie is Pray for Death. And then she's going to.
Maybe not be into it.
She won't be into it.
Yeah. Another movie that's opening in limited release in a few cities this week, but that's been getting a lot of press is. Kirby Dick's The Invisible War.
Which I have not seen. So I'm going to put my fingers in my ear and go, la, 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 la.
I'm not going to give anything away about it.
I'm just ignoring you for this. It's time to think about jelly donuts. Go.
Okay. Anyway, I talked about this some if you listen to our post-Sundance episode, because I saw it there. It's a documentary about rapes in the U.S. military and how the justice system, or lack thereof, is set up in a way that it's really hard for people to... get their accusers, you know, to face any kind of trial or punishment for it.
Is it an awesome 3D like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter?
It is not.
Okay.
Sadly. But the film has already really been
because you can't take incendiary material and, you know, and put it in 3D without making it really rad.
There you go. Well, yes, he decides not. That his choice was not to go that way. The movie's already really been having an impact. It has screened at the Pentagon. It has been shown to, like, some of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah, so they're actually in the process of making certain changes.
Did they show them sick, too? Like, was it a double feature about the movie about Bob Flanagan?
No. Same director. I thought you meant Michael Moore's.
That's an awesome sicko. That's an awesome movie. Sick.
Yes. It's a powerful film. The one flaw that I didn't even really pick up on when I watched it, but that the great B. Ruby Rich pointed out to me afterwards, was that they did not talk to enough women of color in the film, which, given the makeup of the U.S. military,
didn't you say they didn't talk to any?
There are a few. None of the major storylines are about people of color, which, given the makeup of the U.S. military as it stands right now, was something of an oversight, I think. But anyway, it's a powerful film. I know it sounds like a super bummer topic, but it's told really well, and the interviewees you know, they share a lot and really tell their stories, and it's a compelling piece of filmmaking.
You tell me something. Do super bummer topics scare off people from watching documentaries and other films? They don't scare me off at all. Like, you just said, it's a movie about rape in the military. Mm-hmm. I would say, okay, I'll watch that.
Well, I think it does sometimes. I remember when I was on MSNBC.com and I would do those occasional Skype things with Courtney Haslett in New York.
Yeah.
I remember explaining to her what The Cove was about.
What was The Cove?
The dolphin one.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
she
was so aghast and so like, I know, like, not for $1 million would she want to see a movie about dolphin slaughter in Japan, you know? So, yeah,
I understand.
I think that certain topics do turn people off, and
if it's something that you don't know anything about and you want to know something about it? Don't you want to know things?
It's hard enough to get people to go to dramas, you know, because there's so many people who go to the movies for escapism. And so I think...
So I'm crazy.
No, you're just...
Because I want to know things.
No, you're just, I think, in the minority, unfortunately.
I see. Because I want to see this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's a super bummer topic.
Right.
But I want to know things.
And a lot of people do, but a lot more people don't.
Right.
So, you know, there you go. DVD picks.
Sick. The Life and Death of Bob Flanagan, Super Masochist.
That's a good one, yes.
That's my DVD pick. I've decided just now. I picked it.
All right. That's a good one.
I was going to pick Bullhead.
Yes.
Which is a drama that came out earlier this year about the Belgian cattle hormone mafia, and a guy who's addicted to steroids.
Yes.
And it's tragic and heartbreaking.
Yes.
And a really great movie.
And with a really great central performance.
Really great central performance. It's called Bullhead. Really, really go watch this movie because it's so awesome. But my DVD pick is Sick, The Life and Death of Bob Flanagan, Super Masochist.
Very well.
Super Masochist. He was a performance artist.
With cystic fibrosis.
With cystic fibrosis. And he lived way longer than people usually do when they have cystic fibrosis. And he was funny and smart, and his art was about pain because he was in constant pain thanks to the cystic fibrosis. And he turned his disease...
Into a pain he could control.
Into a pain he could control via... S&M, and he would do this, you know, in galleries and museums and stuff. And fascinating guy. It's a tough movie to watch because you see him in performance, and his performances involve having pain inflicted on him.
Yeah,
extreme pain.
Yes,
in ways that made people walk out of screenings that I have been to. I've seen this movie twice in theaters, and both times there are moments where people get up and leave.
And see, now, there's an example.
It's too crazy.
There's an example of a movie that I didn't want to see, but I knew I needed to see it because everybody said how good it was. So I made myself watch it.
Right.
We saw it at the museum that time.
You did not get up and walk out.
I did not get up and walk out.
Yeah.
I was riveted. So yes, it's a great movie. And now I feel even dumber for saying my DVD pick this week is 21 Jump Street. With Magic.
When you compare your choices to the choices of a cineast like myself,
yes,
you know, you can only pale.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway, but it's a very funny movie, and if you know, with Magic Mike coming out next week, Channing Tatum, it turns out, is funny. And
yeah,
can be funny. I almost forgot to mention, this is our 75th episode.
Happy 75th anniversary,
woo!
Jackie Chan.
So, yeah. Anyway, just a little milestone there that we have managed to hit. And because I know that a lot of people...
I hit a milestone this week.
What's that?
I was in the same room as Kylie Minogue.
Oh, that's right.
I was.
Yes.
I stood 5 feet away from Kylie Minogue this week.
And managed not to wet your pants.
I did not wet my pants, and I did not. I did. I vibrated, but I did not squeal.
I can't even imagine what a squeal from you would sound like.
Eee! Here, let me do it again.
You can turn that into a ringtone now.
Yeah. There's a Kylie Minogue shaped hole in my suicidal tendencies shaped
that's a lot of shapes.
Life. Yeah. And she's the only one that gets in there. Like, I don't care about any of these other people. I don't care about the Britneys and the Madonnas and the whatevers.
Gagas.
The Gagas, yeah.
You like Robin.
She's different. Mm. Yeah. She has
a separate hole.
Yeah, yeah. But boy, do I like Kylie. I really like Kylie. And I have for about 20-something years. Yes. Like, I've been there from the beginning as an admirer of her. And I had the opportunity this week to go see her sit on the panel of the show Fashion Police that shoots down on Wilshire at the E Building.
Mm-hmm. Our friends Tony Tripoli and Dennis Hensley, who host the Comedy Couch
our friends Dennis,
podcast.
Yeah, Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, who are the Comedy Couch podcast guys. They are writers on Fashion Police.
Right.
And they got me in to the audience, and I get to sit on the front row, and I get to, like, go when Kylie came out. And here's the thing about the E Building. It's like 30 years old or older. It was made, you can tell that it was made in the 80s. It is the best ninja building. If you were a ninja, I was thinking this while I was standing in the lobby.
They're a huge lobby.
If you were a ninja, you would have a great day in that building, ninja-ing all around, because it's terraced.
Right.
You know, you could just leap from thing.
There's alcoves.
Yeah, you could, like, you could swing from
sconces.
You could swoop and dive and go into windows and stuff. It's the perfect ninja building. I don't.
Perhaps that's how it was designed.
Know that we have. Maybe it was architected with ninjas in mind. And maybe that's not what other people think about when they're waiting to visit with Kylie Minogue, but I think about ninjas and how they would use the environment that we're in. Right. Why am I talking about Kylie Minogue?
Because you brought it up.
Oh, yeah, I did. Well, it was a milestone for me.
It was a milestone, yes. Like our 75th episode.
It was a milestone for me because I don't get starstruck. It doesn't really happen to me. We see famous people all the time.
Yeah.
You know, you live in Los Angeles. They live in Los Angeles. You are going to walk past them sometime. At least once. At least somebody. But if you live exactly where we live, which is like Red Dead smack in the middle of it all, mm-hmm. you're going to see them about once a week. You're going to run into a famous person. You're not going to have an encounter with them, but you're going to see them out doing their thing.
Grocery shopping or whatever.
And so I don't get starstruck, but boy, she made me starstruck. I didn't meet her, but had I met her, I would not have had words. I would have been like, I love you so much, Kylie. Like that's, I can.
Perhaps it's just as well.
I would have been like Lenny in From Mice of Men. I'm sorry.
Of Mice and Men.
Thank you. From Mice to Men. From Boys to
Boys
Men.
Man. Yeah. ABC, BBD.
I would have, yeah. And to hold her and pet her and love her and, yeah. And she's tiny enough to do that.
She's a wee thing.
She's standing in the palm of my hand. That's how little she is.
She's the green fairy.
She is the green fairy. Like, that's how, she's actual size.
There's no effects involved.
She just floats around. And so so that was terrific. That was a good day.
Awesome.
Now,
the thing that I'm sure a lot of people have tuned into our 7th episode, they've been waiting for this week's installment of Playmate of the Apes, Dave White.
The next 15 minutes of Playmate of the Apes involves, they have, they've taken Misty Monday,
mm-hmm.
and they are, and the female ape doctor has learned that Misty Monday, in this 15-minute segment.
What's the female ape doctor's name?
I think her name is like Dr. Cornholius or something like that. And she takes Misty Monday and puts her on a stage festooned with bananas.
Because Josephine Baker was the previous act.
And she plays music for her, a sort of Lancelot Link, Secret Chimp, Surf.
Okay.
Inspired sort of you know. Yeah. And Misty Monday begins to dance.
Uh-huh.
Now, the cave girl that is up on the stage with Misty Monday does not begin to dance.
Is she still wearing the Tiva sandals and the socks?
Uh-huh. The cave girl takes the bananas and steps on them, puts them on her head, uses her own boobs as bongo drums, doesn't know what to do. But Misty Monday is dancing, which is what humans don't do because they don't have souls and they don't have rhythm and they can't, you know, do ape things like dance and think and speak. And so the female ape doctor, Dr. Cornelius, she notices this and says, you know, Bright Eyes.
Oh, really?
No, she doesn't call it Bright Eyes. But there are other Planet of the Apes
references
in this 15-minute chunk.
Okay.
So she goes and she gathers up the other apes and she's like, come look. These humans can dance. They really do it. So she puts Misty Monday up on stage with the Russian astronaut and the super boobular one with the big fake lips and the
injectables.
Yeah. And they put them all up on stage and they all have to dance. And there's various, you know, close-ups of bum wiggling and panty dropping and they dance to house music. And the other apes are like, no, they're just, it's human see, human do. And
see what they did there?
Yeah. And Misty Monday is upset because she's like, look, I can do all these things. I'm a human being and this is a madhouse. And then an Elvis impersonator ape comes out and sings a song. He says, if they can dance to this, then they can really dance. But he's so terrible that they can't dance to his song because it doesn't have any rhythm. Mm. And she yells again. Misty Monday yells at them again that they're, you know, trying to mess with them. And, you know, they've got to get off this planet, you damn dirty apes. And they learn that they've given injectables a lobotomy, although, honestly,
how could you tell?
You can't really tell. And then the cave girl pees on one of their legs. And then they all have sex.
All the women or all the apes?
All the women.
Oh.
No, so far there's been no playmate for the apes.
I see.
Which is bumming me out. Because I've now watched half of this film.
Mm.
And there has been no ape on human playmate.
And as with Seeking a Friend for the End of the World, the title is making promises that it needs to deliver on.
There's 45 minutes left to go.
Okay, so three more installments. This is a
90-minute feature. And I will say that the last 5 minutes of this 15-minute segment were consumed by three-way astronaut sex. Mm.
Astronaut sex.
Yes, astronaut sex.
Right.
Which I was just saying earlier on, I was just calling them astronauts. The movie had not called them astronauts at all. Until this 15-minute segment that I watched where Misty Monday says the word astronaut. And I was like, see, I predicted that. I'm on the same wavelength as this film.
Now, do you think that they mean it as a pun or do you think that she can't pronounce the word? Is it like in Girls Will Be Girls with the astrophysicist?
Misty Monday seems to me to be not a stupid person.
Okay.
Like she might probably be able to pronounce the word astronaut properly.
Okay.
But I think she's emphasizing the first syllable
as
an exercise in witty,
risque double entendre,
titillation.
Mm. She's a veritable Baudelaire.
Right. And so I'm very excited because there's 45 minutes left and I'm determined that this movie is not going to break its promise to me that one of these women is going to become a playmate
of the apes.
Of the apes.
Well, until that, we'll leave that for next time. Real quick, as always, want to give a shout out to our friends in the podcast universe, as previously mentioned.
Oh, we're not going to answer any mail.
Oh, good heavens. I forgot. Yes.
Good heavens is right.
Do go on. We have another top 10 list to analyze this week. Who's are we doing?
Hang on. I have to find.
I thought you had opened all this before.
Well, I went to your the collection of emails that are under your name, to your file.
Yes.
I take all the emails that come from you and I put them in a file.
I see.
That says Alonzo on it. Ignore.
Yes.
And then...
That you just don't delete them, I suppose I should be
I don't delete right? them, no.
Okay, great.
Okay, so here we go. Here is the top 10 list of Ryan from Michigan.
Okay.
Ryan from Michigan says, my favorite movies, The Dark Knight.
Okay.
That's a safe choice.
Sure, yeah.
I'm sure that's a lot of people's favorite film.
On IMDb, anyway.
No Country for Old Men. I gotta say, I might be in agreement with this. I don't know if I would call it a top tenner, but of the past, 10 years, I might say it's one of the top tenners for me of the past 10 years, in terms of American film. We're gonna get real nitpicky here. American films, a movie that I would say actually haunted me.
Really?
After it was over, yes.
There are things about that
movie. And I don't say that kind of stuff ever about any movie.
There are things about that movie that I like, but it's not. It's not even my favorite Coen Brothers movie, probably. And I remember that
year. I think it's my favorite Coen Brothers
movie. I remember that year there were two other movies that were sort of akin to it in terms of tone and whatnot that I thought were better. And that was, There Will Be Blood.
Okay.
And, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford.
I think I liked No Country for Old Men better than those two films.
Okay.
I think I did.
Most people did.
Pretty sure I did.
You're
the final scene in particular has stayed with me.
That was great.
Has stayed with me now.
You know how I feel about Tommy Lee Jones, and I still like that.
That final scene is so perfect that I haven't been able to shake that final scene since it was released.
Okay. I'm in the minority on that one. People like that movie more than I tend to like it. But
here's a super easy one.
Okay.
All About Eve.
Yay.
Which is
perfect.
It's one of the perfect movies.
Yeah.
And this isn't even a gay thing. I know people automatically assume that if a gay guy likes All About Eve, then it's just because you're gay.
Yeah.
Which I hate that thing. I hate the reductive idea that gay guys like X.
And we all do.
And you all do. And if you do, then it's because you're gay.
Yeah, and like it's only because of its gay qualities that you're responding to.
You don't respond to it on any other level other than whatever, invisible rays it's sending out to the gay part of your reptile brain.
Right.
You know, I hate that.
Yeah.
I hate it when people say that stuff. It makes me, it is condescending to gay people when you do that. Anytime you say, well, you do this because you're gay, or you like this because you're gay, or you're concerned about this because you're gay, it's condescending. And it annoys me. And I'll laugh along with you if you're joking and you're my friend, but inside I'm thinking, I don't like you right now. You're being a jerk.
And granted, I wrote a book called 101 Must-See Movies for Gay Men, but that was...
Which means you're part of the problem.
No, I was very clear throughout that book that it's a subjective list.
Part of the problem.
And that I think that it was more for, as far as having kind of a background of the cultural history in a lot of ways.
Admit that you're complicit in
I am not part
your
of
own
the
oppression.
I am not. I am not.
I did not.
Oh, hi, Mark. What else?
Spirited Away.
Yay.
Which is great.
Also perfect.
Here's one I don't agree with. Say Anything. I know people love it. Really love it. People love Say Anything. And it never really meant anything to me other than Lily Taylor. That's kind of it.
It's a movie I like a lot. It would not be on my top 50, probably. Yeah. But, I'll allow it.
Yeah.
I see the appeal to it. I know why it means a lot to certain people. So,
And I've had actually a conversation with Ryan about Say Anything, but I don't know that it's my place to explain its importance to him on the show.
It is not.
And so I won't do that right now.
No.
But I know why he likes it.
Okay.
Doubt, same reason. He has personal reasons for really being into Doubt. And I've actually discussed Doubt with him before too.
You would have to.
Yeah. Well, I've said in our conversation that it's not a movie I like until Viola Davis shows up for 5 seconds.
Right. Her scene is great. The rest of the movie is hamatronic.
Yeah. Now, Ryan, if you're listening, if you would like to
rebut,
provide us some bullet points that are suitable for podcasting about why you've included Say Anything or Doubt on your list, because it would be interesting. And I know your perspective on these two films is interesting. And so, yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, do it. Jaws, which is terrific and one of my favorite movies ever.
Yeah.
Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Sure. Great. Yes.
You know what? I've never seen it.
I know.
Yeah.
When Liz Taylor died, you said that you'd never seen it. And I've been remiss in not sitting you down and making you watch it.
Well, it's just one of those, it's a classic film that I would like to see on a screen. And it does come to screens here in Los Angeles.
I have to say, I have never seen it on a screen.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like,
I just like to see all the old movies on screen.
Sure, obviously, all things being equal. But
if I can, I like to do that way.
It's not, I don't think you're missing anything not seeing, you wouldn't miss anything not seeing it on a screen. But anyway.
A Room with a View.
A movie that I need to go back and see again, because yeah, I really...
Because it's great.
I did not like it when it came out.
It's wonderful.
When it came out, I just thought it was really stiff, and it didn't appeal to me in the least. But I have to say that in subsequent years, I really liked Howard's End. I really liked Morris, you know. There's a lot of Merchant Ivory stuff that I think really works well. So I should give that movie another shot.
And his final title is one that he's totally right about.
Oh, boy.
Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
Whatever.
Totally right. Good list, Ryan.
I wouldn't know about Return of the King because I was so bored by Fellowship of the Ring that I dropped out of that trilogy.
This is a conversation and an argument that you and I have been having for 10 years. Mm-hmm. And I just want you to understand something. You're still wrong. Mm. You are still, and you remain, and you will forever be wrong about all the Lord of the Rings movies. Wrong, wrong, wrong. In this email, Ryan says, P.S. I know a lot of people don't like Doubt, but I love it anyway.
You are correct, sir.
Going back to the All About Eve thing and gays liking things because they're gay.
Right.
I had a great...
says the man who got excited about seeing Kylie Minogue this week.
I could go on a 10-minute discussion of why pop music is cool that has nothing to do with homosexuality.
Fine. Anyway, whatever.
But I won't do that because this is a podcast about films.
Yes.
And if I did like these pop divas because I was gay, I'd like all the rest of them too, equally, wouldn't I?
I'm just
you off. Yeah, I guess I would, wouldn't I?
I am.
Yeah, but I don't. Because I'm selective. Because I know things.
I am playing along with the topic of conversation.
I'm too awesome to be fit into any kind of category.
Really? Shh. Just say what you were going to say.
A former fan of my writing.
We're talking about that.
We're going back. We're going to go back a little bit. Oh, I'm not going to talk about this in great detail, but it is a funny thing that happened.
It is.
A person who used to read my movie reviews on movies.com.
He's from Uganda.
He's from Uganda.
See if you can guess where this is going.
He also friended me on Facebook. This is 2 years ago. He friended me on Facebook. And I was like, oh, interesting. A guy from Uganda who is a fan of my movie reviews has Facebook friended me. And never paid any attention to anything else about my life as I've presented it on Facebook, has only apparently ever read the film reviews. And this week made some really incendiary statements about gays, a.k.a. they all deserve the firing squad, is what he said. And all of his friends, all of his idiot friends are like, yeah, boy, you know, like, and I'm looking at the page, laughing my head off and thinking, you dummy. You've been following a gay film critic for at least two years. Who knows how long before you found me on Facebook. So, you know, I don't like, my Facebook philosophy is go along to get along. Unless you tell me that I should be put in front of a firing squad. And then what I'm going to do to you is pester you to death. Like, I'm not going to argue with you. I'm not going to use vulgar language. I'm not going to insult you. I'm not going to say things negative. I'm not going to say negative things to you.
You're just going to ask for a clarification of terms.
I'm just going to ask for a clarification of your position. I want to know more about how you came to decide that I should be put in front of a firing squad. So I spent the next 5 days asking him the most like needling, pestering, annoying questions I could. And I started just with the comment, I'm gay, period. its end. And that set off a hornet's nest of craziness. And I just said, you know, are you going to be part of the firing squad? Like, will they all have guns? Will there must be one gun with actual bullets in it? Will you be the person who supplies them? Will you be part of the firing squad? Will you be my murderer? What if I were your brother? Would you be a part of the firing squad for your brother if he were gay? What about your dad? What if your dad was gay? Would you be a part of a firing squad if your dad were gay? And he didn't like to answer questions. And I had so many questions for him.
You always have so many questions.
And he didn't really want to answer any of them. And finally, I got bored with it. Like, it was about 5 days of back and forth. And finally, I got bored because I was like, we're not having a Socratic dialogue. This is not happening.
Shockingly.
Why are you not responding to my clear questions about who gets to kill who and who decides who lives and who dies?
Right.
I personally would love to be in charge of who lives and who dies, and I would
get in line.
I would dole out my justice with wisdom,
with a firm but loving hand.
Yes, and so this guy was not playing my game. I kept asking him questions, and he kept jumping around, diverting the topic, saying more incendiary, crazy things that like gay people. No. It wasn't Martin Semper.
Oh, okay.
There's a Ugandan minister on YouTube that
was from a current show. Yeah, from Vanguard.
Provided some of my most favorite anti-gay stand-up comedy to date, where he accused gay people of eating de poo-poo.
Like ice cream.
Like ice cream, yeah. And that's a pretty good impersonation of his accent.
Thank you.
But the this guy on Facebook just said that gay people in his country, there weren't very many of them, you know, because he's got a radar that he can detect.
Oddly enough, the ones that are there aren't real vocal about it.
Right. that they have been influenced by foreign cultures.
Yes, it's all the West's fault.
And those of them who are open just needed money. In other words, they were prostitutes. And so finally I was just bored because I was like, you're not going to answer my questions. I'm not getting under your skin the way I want to. So I just said, you know, enjoy being stupid for the rest of your life. I got to go. And then I defriended him. Yeah. One of only two people I've ever defriended on Facebook. I don't defriend anybody on Facebook unless you become actively
irritating
to me. Yeah. So
you know, back in the day in Dallas when I used to co-host the Lambda Weekly radio show on KNON, for a while there was an Indian show after, like the South Asian, where they played Indian music and blah blah. And one time as we were leaving and they were getting set up, I was like, I said, what is, you know, what's, you know, what's the gay culture in India like, you know? And they were like, oh, we don't really have those in India. We don't, it's not really a thing. Like, just completely.
And then, of course, that Indian prince comes out on Oprah.
Yeah, no kidding. This was years before that. But they were just so like, oh, yeah, no, we don't really have those. I was like, you keep thinking that. Brother. Alrighty, so now, before we pull up stakes, a quick shout out to our friends in the podcast world. As mentioned previously, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, a fine program. Popcorn Mafia, hosted by Gray Drake, who is chatty in the movies sometimes.
She's normally very well behaved.
True, but sometimes. But
I must say, sometimes when she and I go to see Friday morning screenings, we do chat, but we're often alone in the theater.
Well, I assure you that when she and
when Gary Cuddy's nearby.
Yeah, well, he does not have an inside voice. Mm. When she and I kibitzed our way through Margaret, we were being very quiet.
Yeah.
Blowhard with Malcolm Ingram, Fat Guys at the Movies, the Criterion cast, Throwing Shade, hosted by our very funny neighbor, Aaron Gibson and Brian Safi.
Aaron's
our neighbor, not
sometimes,
Brian.
Sometimes we can actually hear them
in the alleyway between our buildings.
Like, we can hear them talking from our window.
Yeah. Voices carry. Team Jack, the Schmoes Know the B-Movies podcast, which I think actually we're doing next week, maybe. We'll keep you posted on that. Okay. Yeah. We'll put it on our Facebook wall, which yes. if you've not already liked the Linoleum Knife podcast on Facebook, you should do that. One last podcast to recommend, Film Spotting SVU. Big fan of Matt and Allison over there. You can listen to this program, subscribe for free on iTunes. You can hear us on Stitcher Radio at thelounge.com. There is an app where you can listen to the show on our Facebook page. You can also follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. Check into the show at GetGlue.com. They do have us listed as a TV show, but whatever, we can live with it. And as Dave mentioned, you can drop us a line about our audio and share your top tens.
Please do these things.
Anything else that you want to run past us, drop us a line at LinoleumPodcast@gmail.com. Next week, Madea's Witness Protection.
I'm stoked.
Sorry. Tyler Perry's Witness Protection.
And also Tyler Perry's Breaking the Waves.
Yes, very excited about that. All right, we thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.